This episode is brought to you by LashBoss Summit. LashBoss Summit is 2 full days of education in Austin, Texas on April 26th and 27th. The lineup is incredible. There are so many talented and genuine people on stage, so you're going to walk away with a ton of lash artistry and business strategy after that weekend. Not only that, there is built-in networking opportunities so that you can make new friends and connections while you're here. Your ticket also includes breakfast and lunch on both days, and all of this could be under $500 if you use code LASHBOSSRADIO. LashBoss Summit is regarded as being incredibly impactful but not overwhelming in the sense of it was designed to reduce anxiety and just be very warm and welcoming and just deliver a ton of value. The lineup, agenda, and tickets can all be found on lashbosssummit.com. I'd really like to see you there. I promise you it will be more than worth it. Enjoy this episode, and I hope to see you in April. Hey everyone, welcome back to LashBoss Radio. I'm Shelby, your host, and today I am joined by Mackenzie Graham, salon owner and lash educator. I am so excited to bring her on for the first time to LashBoss Radio, but she also has a podcast herself, so she is a pro at this. I'm so excited. We're going to be talking about salon ownership, education, and all of the good things. So welcome to the show, Mackenzie.
Thank you so much for having me here. I'm so excited. I've been a big fan of your show since like day one. I remember there was one podcast, I think I told you about this, that you talked about how you didn't set an alarm and you woke up with your body. And I actually did that for an entire year. And I was like, I need to get back on that because I remember thinking like, you know what, this is so cool. I'm going to try it. So I'm really excited to be on today.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I do still sort of do that. But with a child, it's a little different because getting him to school all early, it has changed the way that I function. But overall, yes, I tend to err more on that side. So you're a salon owner. You are a highly requested educator. By the way, side note, if you've ever gone to a conference and Mackenzie's teaching a class or a breakout session or anything, that room is full. Like, you cannot find a seat because she's just, everybody loves her. So anyway, you've got so much going on. Talk to me a little bit about your lash journey, like in a nutshell, just kind of a quick little timeline.
So, quick overview with my timeline with lashing. I dropped out of college and I didn't know what I wanted to do. And my mom was like, you've always been in love with like beauty and makeup. I thought I wanted to be a makeup artist. And so I started going to beauty school. I was getting my lashes done. And the gal was like, hey, if you bring me in to teach a lash class at your beauty school, if you get 12 people to sign up, I'll give you the class for free. So I was like, sweet. Okay, cool. And so that's how I got into lashes. I filled the class and I was able to take that lash class for free. And I was really terrible in the beginning. And I started seeing people's work on social media, only a handful of lash artists that were like really amazing, true Russian volume artists. And I was like, I want my work to look like that. And so after working at the salon for a year, I worked out of my parents' kitchen. And then I realized I couldn't get a home business license. And so I rented a space and then hopped around to a couple different spaces until I found something that I liked that was still close to home and ended up hiring a couple of employees. And I really wanted a commercial space, and then COVID hit. And so I'm actually really grateful that I didn't get into a commercial space before COVID, because I know a lot of salons had to close down during that time because they had these big spaces. And so 2021, I ended up opening my commercial space, and I've had as many as 11 employees. I'm down to 5 now, which is a lot more manageable. And I love that a lot more. And then started speaking and being asked to come to different stages, which has been the coolest and most terrifying thing ever. But it's been really, really amazing to be able to connect with so many other lash artists and salon owners and brand product line owners at the different conferences. And now just kind of training. And I have a couple of clients that I still see. And it's been such an amazing ride. And I never expected it, these little tiny fibers, gluing them onto people's eyes, to take me where it has.
You don't have to have a product line to be asked to speak around the world. You don't have to have a product line or XYZ, whatever thing you can fill in the blank with to get asked to speak, be invited places, to be a super sought out educator. You could be just a really amazing lash artist.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I literally couldn't agree more, because I feel like even a lot of students that I have come in, they have this timeline for themselves. They have, I'm going to be a lash artist for a year or 2 years. I'm going to start training people, and then I'm going to open a salon, and then I'm going to start a product line. And it's almost like this yellow brick road that's just laid out for lash artists, because they see like, oh, that's the natural progression of what I'm supposed to be doing next. And I started to realize, because I was on that same yellow brick road, I was like, oh yeah, product line is next. Like I, even in 2020 and 2021, I started sampling product. And the more I went to these conferences and talked to people who actually had product lines and realized how much time, effort, and energy went into it, and how sometimes they had to throw away a $50,000 palette of brand new product because it wasn't up to their standards. And I was like, hold on, wait a minute. Like, I don't know if I'm cut out for that. I don't know if that's something that I actually am meant to do. I mean, even with the salon, and you know, you and I have talked about this off camera. Those are some things too, where I'm like, hindsight, maybe I wouldn't have opened a salon. Maybe I would have gotten into a bigger space to host, you know, small group classes. But that, you know, being in that managerial position was never my thing. I do really well solo. I do such a good job doing that. And I think it comes down to, you know, people think this is just my next step, instead of looking inward, becoming aware of what they actually want, who they actually are, what kind of role they are meant to step into as a lash artist or salon owner or product line owner. Yeah. So like stepping into that role, I think you just have to become aware of who you are and what you actually want. And if that next step is something that you actually desire, because there are so many more, you know, I heard someone say this the other day at a different conference. They say, you know, if you open that salon or if you start a product line, you're starting a whole entire new business. You're starting a whole new business when you want to take that next step in your career. And you have to understand there are so many other hats you're going to be wearing now with this new business, along with the hats you're already wearing, maybe being a full-time lash artist or a salon owner. And another thing to think about too is you can't do it alone. I feel like that was part of my issue, is every single thing I was trying to do by myself, instead of realizing, you know, if you want to scale, you have to bring other people in to make sure that the jobs that you maybe don't like doing, you can have someone who thrives in that position and do it well. Especially when it comes to like CPA and bookkeeper, that was the first thing I hired out. I was like, I am not going to do that by myself.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I get this. Cause like every time I start a new thing too, I'm like, oh yeah, this is a lot, because you have to have a whole other LLC and a whole, like it's all completely separate, and you kind of forget about all the steps you took to do the first job or role or, you know, segment. And then you're like, literally you have to duplicate it and do everything times two. So it's a lot of like asking yourself, why do I want to do this next thing? Is it for the right reasons? Or is it because other people are doing it and it looks cool, or I think it would make me feel better about myself, or whatever it is. So do you think that like salon ownership for you started off that way, and then were you like hit with like a lot of like a reality check by chance or anything like that? Like, how was that for you when you actually did it?
Oh, 100%. When I first opened the salon, I was like, this is going to be amazing. And before I got into the commercial space, I had already hired on 2 employees, because I was looking, and this was in 2019, because I was already looking at bigger spaces. And then COVID hit, and I was like, okay, well, we're going to be shuffling in this, you know, 10 by 10 tiny little room. And I had a really good time with them, but I was also still taking a full clientele. So then when we got into the big space, it was something where my mindset was, it wasn't necessarily like, oh yeah, this is my get rich quick, like I'm going to be rolling in the dough. I think a little bit of that, but it was also, I had such a horrible experience at the first salon that I started, that I was like, okay. And my 2 employees that I first hired, they reached out to me and asked if I was hiring. I wasn't really there yet, but I was like, oh yeah, if I can bring you on now before we get into a big space, then you can kind of just hit the ground running. But I thought, oh, perfect. I'm duplicating myself, and I'm going to be able to create like this positive, safe environment for them, where you know, they're going to make mistakes and that's okay. I'm going to be there to help them and back them up and have their back when it comes to clients. If any, you know, clients are unhappy or anything, because we were kind of just thrown to the wolves. If a client was unhappy at the salon that I started at, it was all of our fault. Like, and then we weren't given any feedback on how to fix it. And so I was like, I want to do everything completely different. I was making $8 an hour when I was working at the salon, and we didn't realize it. And so there were a lot of things going on there that, you know, weren't legal. And so I was like, I want to do things differently. But I was taking a full clientele and I didn't realize, oh, like my employees need my help. And so I started to cut back on my client taking, because I realized they needed more hands-on from me. And when I started to take less and less clients and started to bring on more girls, I was like, wait a minute, why are we like, where's all this money? Like, we were making more money before, what's going on? And I didn't realize I had taken advice from a coach that was not great advice specifically for me. It worked for her because what she was doing, but she didn't take into account like my overhead expenses, all of these other things. I was paying my girls 60% commission. Mm-hmm. And so when I started to take a step back so I could spend more time making sure that their craft was up to my level that I wanted them to be at, I realized, oh, this business cannot run without me taking clients. I was like worried about making rent. I was worried about, you know, paying our PUD, our heat bill and those things, because I had the numbers all wrong. And so I realized, oh shit, like I'm not duplicating myself. And most of the clients that had seen me forever, I started to realize, oh, it's not necessarily my skill, because I've trained all of them. They do identical work to me, but it was the connection that they had built with me that wanted them to continue with me, which was kind of, again, it was like something that was extremely flattering, but also like, girl, I need to work on the business and not in the business. Like, I need you to do me a solid here, like see one of the other girls. And so it was more so me realizing this is 10, because I thought I was going to go in, I was going to open the salon, I was going to train the girls over, you know, a week or 2 weeks, and then they were going to be pretty self-sufficient. And that couldn't have been further from the truth. So that was something that definitely was a huge wake-up call a few months into opening the salon.
I can completely relate to all of that. Same scenario would happen to me as well. Okay, so now at this point with this new like knowing of how it goes and how it went, if you had to go back and talk to younger you, you've already opened the salon. You can't say you're not doing it now. You've already opened it. What would you do differently, or what would you tell her to do?
I would honestly say like hire strategies, hire strategies to get you in a place where you have the numbers, you have that grasp on it. Because I had always had a pretty good grip on my personal numbers. But then when I started bringing employees in, it was something where I was like, oh, I don't really have to, you know, think about this too much or worry about it too much, because I'm duplicating myself. There's going to be more of me. So obviously we're going to be bringing in more money. But I was paying them it at a rate that wasn't going to be healthy for the business. But it didn't make sense to me, because I was like, well, this is kind of what I'm paying myself. Like, this makes sense to me. But we started going through so much product, and I didn't understand like productivity rate, how to understand and track with the girls and have meetings with them to say, you know, let's work on this, let's work on that. And so I would hire strategies or another coach who had experience in owning and running salons healthily, that would have started me off from that point of knowing exactly what I needed to do, what changes I needed to make, so that everybody was on the same page from the beginning, instead of then, you know, 6 months in being like, oh, wait, you guys, I can't pay you 60% anymore. Like, and being very honest. And that was something that was a huge growing and learning lesson for me, because I was like, I need to be very vulnerable with them. I need to tell them like, hey, you guys, I'm struggling to pay rent because I'm not taking clients and I'm, you know, paying myself from classes. And it was something that I think it was a huge reality check for me to realize, like, one, I needed to be honest with them. Two, I had no idea how they were going to respond to their pay being cut. And that was something where I was like, they're all going to leave. They're all going to leave me. And I also felt so terrible that I just blindly listened to a coach in the beginning to just be like, yeah, perfect. We can pay you 60%. And then having to go back on that and just be like, oh shoot, like I never wanted to have to, you know, be in that situation. And I feel like that's why I'm such a huge advocate for people who want to open salons, to be like, do it right from the beginning, so you don't have to go through those situations that I did. So that's what I would tell my younger self. Go through the right channels to set the salon up for success, so you don't have to be in that position. Because, you know, in my mind, obviously, it's like I'm letting them down, and I never wanted to have to do that. And luckily, everybody stayed and everybody was like, oh, I'm really glad like you're telling us this, because it also kind of made them reflect on like, do I want to go out on my own? Do I want to have a salon one day? And it wasn't ever to be a scare tactic, but it was like, I'm just going to be real with you guys because it is a lot of work and it's all on my shoulders. And I think I would have, you know, having a coach or having strategies, someone to, you know, look after, it would kind of feel like I was sharing that burden almost, even though, you know, it wasn't, they weren't on the line. It would just be like, oh, I would have that sounding board to help me work through it rather than me feeling like I had to do it all on my own.
Totally. I use strategies as well. And I was somebody that like turned to them when I was like, what do I do? Like, I just had no idea what was wrong until, you know, they go in there and they see what there's so much. And if I would have done it again too, I also would have started with them sooner. I ended up being a coaching client of theirs for 4 years. And that's like a testament to what they're doing, because I could have stopped after year one or two. And I just was like, nope, there's still more. I've been learning. So, and I got something out of it every single month that I did a call with them. But yeah, it's great for salon owners. I think a lot of times people start out the same way. They're fully booked. So they're like, okay, let me bring someone in to help. But it's hard because you have to become like a trainer and a manager and a kind of like a receptionist as well, and you're focusing on getting their content up and promoting them and getting your clients to see, hey, they're not so bad, I promise. Like, you can trust it'll be good quality. And then it's dealing with, okay, there was a client that wasn't happy. How do we handle that? There's so much. I remember working open to close every single day for years when I first opened the salon. So I'm glad that you speak on this too, because it's so important to talk about the real sides of salon ownership. Do you feel like it's worth it now? Like, as a salon owner today, after you've gone through that whole journey, would you say that you wish you never have done it? Or at this point you feel like, okay, it's not so bad?
I think if you had asked me that question 3 to 6 months ago, I would have said, I wish I had never done it and just said, like, wish I had never done it at all. And I think now that things have started to move in the right direction, I mean, really just this year, it's started to move up and up and up. And I've started to realize like, oh, okay, I have, like, if I would not be able to say I've done everything I can to make this as successful as possible. So I don't really have an answer for you, because now that's my goal with this year. Like, I need to do everything I can to make this as successful as possible. And then I think I'll change my mind. Mm-hmm. And I think, I mean, I'm such a huge proponent of your mindset is so important. And the more I think about it, the more I realize the last 3 years, I've been looking at the salon negatively and just been so irritated, because I start to get in that mindset of like, oh, I'm kind of irritated I made this decision to open it. I'm irritated that I listened to that coach. I'm irritated I didn't hire a proper coach earlier. And I had to kind of get myself out of that and be like, okay, we're done with this pity party. Like, you need to get to that point where you need to look at it positively. And like, you need to look at your team and realize like, they're relying on you and they need you to step up and be that leader that they want you to be, that you want to be. And so it's something that now I feel like I look at it like, okay, this is my chance to make it as successful as possible. And then if I still feel the way that I feel, and like, I'd rather not have it, I'd rather just do training and my solo thing and whatever, then you know what, I'll sell it, or I will close it, whatever. If nobody wants to buy it, yeah. Like, we'll sell it or get rid of it. And then, you know, if I decide to like it and I realize like, oh, these systems are in place, it does run relatively well, then why would I want to get rid of it?
Mm-hmm. Totally. I think it takes a while, much longer than one would think, I think, to make a salon make sense. I think, especially if you didn't start out the right way from the beginning, like both of us. But I want to say, if you started out the right way from the beginning with, like, if you know you want to open a salon, go ahead and invest in a coach for salon owners. Strategies is so affordable for all that you get, I think. And Paul and Tussany from LashCast also love Strategies as well. They were the ones that I heard it from. So yeah, in our community, I think they're great. So you're also an educator as well. You have a class actually coming up in Austin. Do you want to talk a little bit about your classes and what you have going on right after the summit?
Yes, I'm so excited. Chris, who you guys might know him as Lash Guy Pro, reached out to me and he knew I was coming to Lash Boss Summit, which I'm so excited about. And he asked if we wanted to do a collab class together. And I'm so excited because I've been wanting to do travel trainings. And of course, while I'll already be at Summit, I'm excited. So April 28th, Chris and I are going to be doing a joint class together. I'm going to be teaching all about lashing and layers and technique and things that can make or break your sets, especially when it comes to styling clients' eyes. And he's going to be teaching the famous flower bouquet method, which will be really exciting. I actually have never learned that method, so I'll be interested to, you know, kind of be a student as well. And but yeah, so we're going to be doing that. I do mainly one-on-one classes up here in Seattle and have started to branch out into, you know, reaching out to people to do more travel trainings. I think we'll have Arizona coming up, Reno sometime in the next, you know, year or so. And, but yeah, training has been so fun. And I think it's been so exciting for me because I was such a bad lash artist in the beginning. And I knew what it felt like to have trainers that were irritated with me. And I would be like, I'm sorry, I'm trying to understand. And it just like took me a little bit longer. So I feel like it's giving me that perspective of being really patient with students who struggle. And then the students who get it like really quick. Sometimes I tell them, I'm like, just so you know, this is really frustrating because it took me like 2 years to do this and you've done it in 5 minutes. But it's been really a fun journey, especially too, to see students of mine go on to open their own salons or get out, you know, from under a salon and start their own business and be in a salon suite. And so it's been a really incredible journey.
So in your classes, are you mostly teaching like the layering or are you doing everything like volume, like in general? Is it mostly like a volume class? Is it mostly like a niche focus on layering? How is it formatted?
Mine, I kind of teach everything. And because up here in Seattle, I mainly do one-on-ones, I send them this huge form to ask them exactly what they want out of the class. So I pretty much tailor it to what they need. Of course, I have all the things that I want to talk about. But if they say in there, like, I'm getting into a solo suite by myself, these are the things that I'm struggling with technique-wise. So I mainly talk about lashing and layers and how to style clients' eyes, you know, choose the shape for them, choose what's going to be best. I talk a lot about client communication and if a client is saying one thing, what they're actually meaning, because clients don't speak lash. They don't understand, you know, what curl they're really asking for. And so for them to be able to give the best client experience, I talk a lot about how to price themselves as well, because a lot of the time what we do is we look at other people's pricing around us and we price ourselves based on that, not knowing what the other person's expenses are and not really truly understanding what our expenses are. So that's something I really love talking to new lash artists about, especially when they're right about to go out on their own. And another thing that I like to talk about too is just creating that experience from top to bottom, creating those expectations of what clients can expect from them, what they can expect from their clients after communicating with them thoroughly. So it really, and again, it just goes back to really tailoring it to their experience with them. But I like to do theory and then a couple hours of hand, you know, making fans and then going into a model. And I think a model is my favorite part because then you get to really get in there and adjust the tweezers or, you know, show them different things that they might not be already doing or they might be doing and they might be needing just a little bit of guidance, a little bit of change to make things easier on themselves and their bodies being a lash artist.
Awesome. That's really good. I think it's great to see an educator that like cares that much and is even willing to talk about stuff that is outside of technique or just to help grow your business skill set too. Soft skills and all of that is important, like client experience and everything. So is your class typically just one day? They book you for one day and get as much as you can done in that time type of thing?
It's typically 2 days. I like to spread it out to do the model on the second day, because another thing that we actually talk about quite a bit, actually, I get a lot of questions about is social media and the fear behind posting on social media and posting their face and, you know, putting themselves out there. And a lot of it is like the marketing strategy behind how you're writing your captions. Who are you trying to attract? And so a lot of the time we'll go through like a client avatar. Who's our ideal client? Like, where are they spending their time? Where are they doing this? So I like to have the whole first day. And the reason I love the second day too, to do the model is because we have a lot more, we have that full time to work on the model. But also a lot of the time, if I have a client on, or if I have a student on one day and just have them for that day, half the time I'm getting questions the second day or the third day saying, oh my gosh, I wish I would have asked you this when I had you one-on-one. And so a lot of the time when I'm going through all the information on day one, I'll ask them if they have any questions. And sometimes they're kind of just like, whoa, that was a lot of info. Like, I think I need to digest it for a minute. And so having that second day where they can come back in and be like, okay, these were the notes I took. These are the questions I have. And so we have that time, you know, in the morning or a little bit after their model to be able to go over anything that they might want clarification on has been really nice. There are sometimes I will do a 1 day class without the model. It's just more someone who feels like, and because again, too, not everyone does well on model day. I'm not a good model day student. Like, there are still classes I took last year where I'll be doing fine. And then the trainer will come over and I'm like, can you actually not hover over me? Like, I need you to leave me alone. Like, can I do my work? And so sometimes too, if people don't want to do that, I'm like, I don't want to stress you out. You can also go home, take photos, take videos, send them to me, and I can critique you in that way. So it's really, you know, that 1 day is perfect for someone who's like, I think, you know, I'm pretty confident in my skills. There are just a few things I need to brush up on or adjust. And then we go from there.
It's almost like a fine tuning artist situation, like where they can go in and just get a tune-up of all of the things, which is really cool. That's actually a really cool concept of education, I think. What is your philosophy, or like, what are your thoughts on just seeing all of the online education lately and the direction that's going? Do you have any thoughts about that?
I have online courses myself. And so I think it just depends on the person. Like, I've bought a number of online courses and I'm like, I got so much good information from this. I bought other online courses that are not lash related, that are not lash specific, that I'm like, okay, I could have searched YouTube for this stuff. So I think it really depends. There's a, you know, there's so many different ranges when it comes to product suites too, with different trainers. If you've seen that whole MRR master resale right stuff all over the place, I feel like that's something that could potentially hurt the industry as well, because there will be students who will buy multiple courses and they're like, oh my gosh, I just bought the same thing twice. And so I think, again, it just depends on the educator, because some are so value packed and do a really good job. And I think too, like, as the student, you have to understand, like, am I going to sit down and watch this? Am I going to pay attention, or is Netflix going to be on in the background and I'm not really going to be paying attention? So I think it really depends on how seriously you take your craft, because I think signing up for online courses can be amazing if you're going to sit there and you're going to take notes and you are going to take what you learn and apply it to your skills. Whereas other people, if they know themselves well, they could say, you know what, that's not going to work for me. I need to be in person. I need to have that one-on-one time. So, I mean, I go back and forth. I think there are some really bad courses out there. I think there are some really good courses out there. I think it's just, you know, listen to your gut, use your discernment. If you feel like any weird feelings about signing up for a course, maybe that's not the best course for you to sign up for. And if it's something where there's testimonials where you can reach out to previous students and ask them questions, you know, to find out all the information that they got in there, if it's going to be a good move and investment for you.
Yeah.
Then I think go for it.
Yeah. It's also a lot about the educator is what I'm hearing too, is like the educator could be doing online and in person, both being great classes because it's who the educator is and what they're producing, anything that they're putting out in whatever medium is usually good value. And then there's some people that are always just looking at like another way to scam people. So who knows, you know? Okay. So last year, going to kind of switch gears and talk a little bit about events and conferences and stuff like that. So last year at Summit, you spoke on pricing. This year, you're speaking on layering. Am I right?
Yes.
Cool. Mm-hmm. What was your experience like last year? And what are you looking forward to for this year, next month? Oh my gosh.
I know. Oh my gosh, it's so soon. I was so excited. So last year was my first summit that I had been to. And of course, being asked to speak is like the biggest compliment ever. And it was so cool. And I remember saying to you, I don't even know if you remember this. It was right after I talked and I had to like run up, get my bags and fly home that day. And it was the last day of summit. And I just remember looking at you and being like, this is the most chill, well-run, most thought out, like schedule and structure. And I think it just speaks to who you are as a person too. Like you're not all frantic and crazy and like everyone can feel that energy of it's just like, it's very calm, positive, inviting energy. And I think too, like, of course, with the conferences, I've had very positive experiences at every conference that I've been to, but there's just something different about Summit that it's just like a little bit more uplifting, a little bit more just inclusive. And I think too, that you, since you cap your tickets, it really allows us to create those deep connections with people we have never met or people we have met before. Talking about pricing was a lot of fun. It was funny getting a couple questions after about the talk and how to implement that and how to communicate with your clients. And, you know, pricing and money, it's hard to talk about. People don't want to talk about it. There's a lot of, you know, stigma around wanting to talk about money or wanting to make a lot of money. And, you know, it's something that I was really happy to speak on. And I'm super excited to come this year and talk about layering. I feel like, again, that's been really, you know, popular to talk about. And I've gotten a lot of feedback of, you know, people who have heard this talk before, you know, give feedback about how they're like, I feel like this is a class that I can listen to and then directly go back and apply it to what I'm doing and how I'm lashing. And so that's a huge compliment and makes me feel really good that, you know, they feel like they get value out of it. Because a lot of these times too, it's like, okay, is this slide important or do I delete this slide and add a different one to make sure that, you know, I'm speaking in the allotted time that I have and making sure that they're still getting the value that they want. Mm-hmm. But I feel like every speaker that you have, I was looking through the schedule and I've been messaging back and forth with Blaze actually of Lashivo. Mm-hmm. And we were going to be doing not necessarily similar topics, but she was going to be talking about Russian volume. And she's like, I just want to make sure we're not talking about the exact same thing. And she's like, just kidding. People want me to talk about neuromarketing. Yeah. So you might be adjusting that. And I was like, perfect. But it was just so cute because, you know, even the speakers too, coming in and being like, I'm going to make sure I'm not talking about the same exact thing you are. Like, let's compare notes and let's do this. And it's so inclusive and so inviting. And I'm just really excited. And I can't believe it's a month away.
Yes. Oh my gosh. So last year, I remember when it actually started and like the first talk was going on, I didn't have any more like nerves after that because I was like, oh, I mean, these speakers are all so talented and it's just the right group of people. You know, if there were people up there with just huge egos and just in it because they just want their name saying I'm a speaker, it would be different. But it was people that I think I chose intentionally because they're the good guys. They're people that care so much about everything that they produce. And so, of course, all of the presentations were going to be valuable and they were going to be up there on stage killing it. And so you and everyone, I just was like, wow. And I was just sitting there in awe of every single presentation because I'm like, these people are so smart and so talented and wise and intelligent. And so I think you guys had such a big part in like what made the summit what it was. And so I asked a lot of y'all to come back this year, change up the topics, of course, but I'm so excited to have you back. You were, I did a survey at the end and your talk was very much up there with everybody saying like what their favorite talk was and everything. So I'm happy you'll be back.
Oh, that makes me so happy to hear. I feel like a lot of people liked the money talk. And then I quickly created the worksheet for them afterwards. I was like, if you were at the talk, I started messaging everyone back. I was like, here's a little worksheet. So it'll be fun because I'll have some freebies at the end of the slide for people to be able to download and have those slides and, you know, look back on later on.
And this year, there's like a cocktail hour after each day. The first day is just for VIPs, but the second day there'll be a cocktail hour so that you guys can talk with everyone and it will feel like immediately they can go find that speaker that they wanted to ask a question to if they didn't have time during the presentation, which I think is nice. Don't you love at conferences like just the conversations, not just even the education's one part, but the parties are one part, but the just sit down conversations. I love that. How do you feel about events in general? Like, what is your favorite part about them?
Yeah, I think me too. I would say the same thing. It's like the sit down conversations, like when you end up in, you know, being like, who's going to lunch somewhere? And then all these people end up going to lunch together or dinner or even just at the cocktail hours like that. And I think too, it opens up the space because a lot of people after someone gives a talk and there's 200 people in the audience, some people are like, sure, I'll ask a question, but I would say 90% of the people are like, I'm not asking a question in front of all these people because they don't want it to be perceived as a dumb question. But honestly, like, I'm the person that asks dumb questions. Like, if there's any question to ask, like, ask me, because half the time I'm like, I want to know exactly what you mean. I want to know exactly what you're talking about because I don't want to get to that point and not understand it fully or make decisions based on, you know, information I have that I don't fully understand. So I'm like, ask the questions. You're in a safe space. And I think too, the more conversations you have with people, the more you realize like, oh, we're all the same person. Like I'm thinking this question, five other people might be thinking this question. And I think that's my favorite part, having those conversations, is realizing, you know, we're really not that different. And we can relate to each other so easily because all of us are business owners. All of us, you know, started in the lash industry and, you know, maybe have branched off to be a salon owner and so on and so forth. And I think it's been cool too, because it's almost like we're in a mini mastermind when we get into those little groups. And I'm kind of crazy and just start like coaching people or like people ask me questions. And then even when I was sitting with you guys in Florida, you know, I was asking you guys questions and you guys were pretty much coaching me. And I think it's just so cool to realize so many of us want to help. So many of us want the other person to succeed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, through social media, it's kind of hard to see that. But when you meet these people in person, you realize, you know, there are more good guys than there are bad guys out there.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that concept of like talking with someone, giving advice and receiving it, it's just like this loop of giving and receiving. And it feels so good to be with someone that's either done what you're doing or is trying to do what you've done and vice versa. It's like you can see each person in that talk is like giving to each other, whether it's support or advice or love, whatever it is. It feels so good. And it's something that you can't really duplicate online, because sometimes whenever I get messages, it's different. You can't convey energy the same way you can in person. And plus you can, like, a dialogue is so different in person too. So I love all events that I've gone to in this industry, I feel like have been worth it. And anytime I see something come up, I'm like, what's my schedule that day? Can I make it? I don't care who's throwing it or where it is. I'm going to try, you know. Before you go, I do want to ask about your social media strategy. Do you have a strategy about posting? Like, how often do you work on your content? I know you did this, I don't know if it was an intentional series, but you did bring your sister to get her lashes done, and she would always like pick them off or something. And I would be so invested, like, what's going on? And I would love when you would post about that. Anyway, so do you have a strategy? What is it? How often are you working on social media?
So I'll talk about the strategy first, and then I'll talk about the unintentional Hulu series. So strategy, I have never been one that works well with, like, on Monday, I'm going to post a reel. On Tuesday, I'm going to post a graphic. On Wednesday, I'm going to do this, because I am such a, I need to work with my creative flows person, that I was like, hold on, I've set aside an hour for myself on Monday to film, but actually I want to do this instead. Like, this is something that needs my attention right now. And so for me, I've never had a like set strategy. I will say, when I was not taking a full clientele or any clientele at all, I was just doing my mom and my sister, I would have models come in and I would lash them, and I would have my assistant film, and I would have all this extra free time to be down at the shop to just do funny reels. And that was really, 2021 when I opened the salon. And we were only allowed to work at 50% capacity. So I was letting my employees work the hours that they wanted to work. And I would come in early in the morning, do my content, and pretty much come home and work on my laptop and, you know, push marketing emails for the girls. And that's when I grew the most. And I was the most consistent, because I didn't have a full clientele I was taking care of, because my online courses were pretty much all filmed. I was just marketing them, or, you know, editing, adjusting here and there where I needed to. And I was posting at least one reel every day, if not two reels, like every other day, because I just had all this content made. And I will say, people who say to themselves, I'm not creative, I could never come up with those things, or, you know, I couldn't be that consistent because I don't have the time. If you made the time and you started to say to yourself, like, I'm a huge journaler, I've said that like on almost every single one of my podcast episodes, but I started to have to write to myself, because I felt the same way. I started to write to myself, like, creative ideas come to me daily. You know, I am a creative person. I can make time to create content and post content. And like, I literally had to remind myself, it's not that serious, because I think so many people get in their heads about it. They're like, oh my gosh, I'm putting myself out there and being vulnerable. I'm putting myself up to, you know, get attacked by these trolls. And it really, that doesn't happen very often. I've had a couple, you know, hit a few million views. Yeah, those ones are going to get some more trolls on there. But really, truly, like, that's not the goal behind the piece of content. The goal behind the piece of content is to create that relatability with other lash artists in my area, so I can be that go-to person when they decide they want to, you know, purchase an online course, or, you know, come for an in-person training. You have to think about the goals behind the content you're creating. If you're doing stuff, you know, to be funny and silly and relate and create that community, that was always my goal. And so there's no strategy. It's really, I kind of just go through the ebbs and flows of when I'm feeling creative. I will say, if you create goals for yourself to say, I'm going to post at least 3 times a week, and you stick to it, the less you let yourself down and the more you actually do create and succeed with those micro goals, the easier it's going to be for you to tell yourself, okay, I'm going to post every single day, and you're going to do it. You're going to figure it out. And the more consistent you are, the easier it is for you to play the game of social media and realize what your audience wants from you and what they don't. You also get to play the game and realize, what kind of content do I like to create? And then that can become really fun, because then you can start to niche down on what kind of content you start to create. And you can, and when you understand what your audience likes, the more chances you are of getting those vanity metrics. And again, vanity metrics are not the be all end all. I'll post things trying to sell a course or get people to sign up for a class. It might get 30 likes, but if I get 2 or 3 signups, then I've reached my goal for that specific post. Now, with the Lulu series, that was very unintentional. It wasn't something that my sister always was like, you're posting this to drag me. Like, you're just making fun of me. And I was like, no, it's relatable, because I bet you anything, there are other people who are lash artists, and their sisters or their moms or their aunts or their friends pick their lashes out. And those are the people that are going to find this funny.
And so I do my sister's lashes every single week, every Thursday at 9:30 in the morning. I give her an hour fill, which typically ends up being closer to a full set because she has that habit of picking her lashes out, which is fine. We've gotten used to it. Nobody has to feel sorry for me or like bad for me about, you know, having to do a full set on her every week. And it was just funny because the more I started posting it, I actually went to a couple conferences last year and people started asking me, where's Lulu? Like, did you bring Lulu with you? Because they know who she is now. And people will come up and be like, I love this series because my sister does the same exact thing to me. And so for me to kind of like drag her a little bit and want to post that to be like, I know somebody out there has to relate to this. And realizing it reached so many more people than I ever would have thought. I actually brought Lulu to a conference with me this last weekend. And I told her, I said, just so you know, like my friends who I know in the industry already know who you are. You've never met them, but they've seen you on social media. And I said, I bet you at least one person is going to be like, oh, the famous Lulu. And she's like, don't, dude, nobody's going to say that. I think probably like 5 to 10 people said the famous Lulu. And she was like, I'm embarrassed. Like, I don't want to be known for picking out my lashes.
Oh my God.
But it is really funny how quickly that series caught on and how many, and it's simply because it was relatable. And people said, you know, I have a sister who does that too.
It's wild. Cause imagine like you're focusing on you're like sitting there like, okay, what good idea should I do? And you're just posting something that, you know, you want to, and it's like that thing is what hits. Cause I feel like that series or, you know, is what made me be like, oh my gosh, like Mackenzie's really killing it with social media. And in that era, I just was like, wow, Mackenzie. And yeah, it's just funny how sometimes like you don't even have to put too much energy into it. And that's what sticks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll honestly say the pieces of content that I've spent 30 seconds creating pop off, and the ones that I'm like, I'm going to put a lot of time into this one, and I spend like 30 minutes editing, and I'm like, well, really glad the 30 second one took off. So I think that also trained me to realize too, like, I don't have to bend over backwards to try and create this like really eye-catching and thing, because you don't know what's going to pop off. And so test your content, play with all of it and see what works.
Got it. Good advice. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing all of this with us. It was such a good episode. We covered so much. But yeah, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you so much for having me. I had so much fun talking with you.
Yeah, and see you next month.